You are Locked On Pirates, your daily podcast on the Pittsburgh Pirates, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Locked On Pirates, your Pittsburgh Pirates podcast of choice. My name is Jason Rolison. In addition to this podcast, you can find me on BucksDugout.com, PiratesBreakdown.com, and a couple other places as well. But we're here today, and I'm very happy about this, to bring back Cannonballs, which OG heads will remember as our kind of our game show where we throw some topics in the water and see who takes the bait and then score the argument. So to help us revive this, I brought Alex Stump from Bucks Dugout. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Jason.
Hey. And a new challenger to the fray here is Noah Hiles. You know him from producing on 93.7 The Fan, from writing on 93.7 The Fan, and now on PiratesBreakdown.com as well. Hello, Noah.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
All right. Very, very understated intro. You know, we'll see where it goes with it. Maybe he's hustling us right now like the pool sharks in the pool alley, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. All right. So we're going to throw out three topics here, and since Alex has played the game before, we're going to go to Noah and give him a shot at first crack here. So topic one, Josh Bell. Obviously, he's struggling right now. Not really the hitter everyone thought he would be. And were we wrong to expect more from him based on what we saw in 2017? So, Noah, the floor is yours. What do you think? Did we go wrong in expecting too much from Josh Bell?
Yeah, absolutely not. Let's look at Josh Bell starting in the minor leagues. This is a guy who they changed his position from outfield to first base so they could find him a spot in the everyday lineup. And it wasn't because of his glove. It was because of his bat. This guy was supposed to be a very good hitter that we could rely on once he became a regular major league player, an everyday major league player. And, you know, you continue through his minor league progression. I remember watching this guy hit a home run in the Futures game, and they were talking about him, saying this is the next big hitter for the Pirates, who at that time were a pretty prominent franchise. And then, you know, you look at the 3 years where the Pirates were competitive. Remember, that seems like a really long time ago. But they passed up on a lot of potential trades with prospects that they didn't want to give up. They held on to guys like Josh Bell that, had they let go, they probably could have made a little bit bigger runs towards the postseason, maybe even won a division. But guys like Josh Bell are who they held on to, and he is one of many who have underproduced after being held on to. You also got to remember, this is a guy that was rumored to be involved as a possible person we would give away in the Jose Quintana deal. That never happened. And you look, he goes to the Chicago Cubs. They go to the National League Championship Series. I believe if we got Jose Quintana for, I think the names associated were Meadows, Bell, and Glasnow. In hindsight, I'm fine with that trade being made. And they didn't pull the trigger on it. And it looks like, you know, we missed out. Take a look at his rookie year, something that also looked pretty good. 26 home runs as a rookie. And this guy was supposed to be the future cleanup hitter, a guy to solve our ongoing problem at first base, something that we've always needed. And the left-handed power bat, I know he's a switch hitter, but all of his power comes from the left side. This is someone that we've been looking for a while that we thought we would have a final answer to. Entering this season where McCutchen leaves, everyone's talking about how it's this guy's turn to take over as the face of the franchise. Coming into this year, there were a ton of questions with the rotation, with the bullpen, with Moran at third, with Polanco producing the outfield. Seemed like the one solid thing we had going for this club was at least we got Josh Bell at first base. Well, Josh Bell has not been good at first base. He still can't learn how to throw a ball to second base, which I don't understand what the deal is there. He still can't, you know, hit for power after we're in June. He has 4 home runs. That's one more than Sean Rodriguez right now, Jason. That's not good. You know, he showed up early to spring training. Everyone talked about how he was going to be a leader. Well, in baseball, I believe that leaders' actions speak much louder than words. And we have not seen any actions to indicate this guy is going to be the leader of a ball club that's going to be competitive or the face of a franchise. Those were the expectations, in my opinion, and I don't think I was the only one. And we weren't going to see a Hall of Fame-type season from Bell this year. No one was expecting that, but we were sure as heck expecting better than what we have gotten from Bell to this point so far.
There's a chapter in a book, Moneyball, by Michael Lewis that I absolutely love, where he's talking to these old school scouts and the scouts are talking about, oh, you know, he's got the rocket arm. He's got, you know, a great bat. He can make contact and all these things. And Billy Beane's like, no, he can't. You guys are looking for jeans models. You're buying jeans. I'm looking for ball players. And Josh Bell seems like one of those guys that is someone who's trying to sell jeans, because you look at him and you see this tall, I believe 6'4", you know, muscular dude playing first base. You take one look at him and it's like, all right, this guy's going to hit, you know, 30 something homers sometime from now. But the mechanics have been so bad. He can't repeat his mechanics at the plate, and that's been the real problem. I mean, if you look at his season totals, 297 batted ball and play average, so you can't even really argue that, or that the shifts are really, you know, screwing him over anymore. He has a sub-250 batting average, sub-330 OBP, 376 slugging. It's just overall bad. The depressing part is, no, I don't think Pirates fans really deserve to expect more out of him, because the Pirates have had a terrible track record of producing position players in the Neil Huntington era. The two that have actually come through and had great success were Andrew McCutchen and Neil Walker, who were both drafted in the Neil Littlefield, or the David Littlefield era. Not Neil Littlefield. That's a heck of a Freudian slip right there. But the only other position players of real merit have been Pedro Alvarez, who just got DFA'd from the Baltimore Orioles, which, if that doesn't tell you the state of his career,
yeah,
that's not exactly a great place to be. And even then, he was, I believe, the second overall draft pick, a surefire prospect who had, you know, hype, the same hype that Josh Bell did, and only had one three-war season in his time in Pittsburgh. And the other one is Jordy Mercer, who, nothing against Jordy, he's been, you know, day-old white bread as far as players go, but hey, you know what? Sometimes whenever you need to make a sandwich, you need that day-old white bread. So I don't want to, you know, really take anything away from him, but he's not going to win you games, he's not going to lose you games. That's a fine player to develop, but whenever that's the second best success story that you have as a position player in 10 years of drafting, that is a problem. I can see how if you look at Josh Bell and you want to, you know, buy jeans, this is the guy that, yeah, you could expect a lot. But as a whole, minor league home run totals, 14 in 2016, 7 in 2015, 9 in 2014. It's not what you want to see. And those are all, you know, 600-something plate appearances. So it's not like he was really injury-shortened or anything in those years. He's never really shown a great amount of power in the minor leagues, but we're just promised that it will come through. No, I'm not very surprised that Josh Bell is struggling right now, and I don't think Pirates fans, if they really look deep down, could really say that they're surprised either.
Let's get one thing right. Just to throw my two cents in, those 28 home runs last year are absolutely a mirage.
26.
Thank you. I think those are absolutely a mirage. He was never coming through as a high power player. If everything breaks right, I think you can hit 20 home run power, which he showed last year. But his overall ISO was just 211 last year. And he still only put up a 0.8 F4 despite of all that. Was still just a slightly above average player. WRC plus of 108 last year. So after throwing my two cents in and adding my two cents to what the sense that Alex is making, I'm going to give this round to Alex. You know, Noah, I got to say, you came out with fire, and that's always appreciated on Cannonballs. But at this time, Alex takes it. But let's go on to the next topic. And we're going to move right on down to another hitter in the Pirates lineup who is struggling. Although, is he really? And his name is Corey Dickerson. Obviously, still hitting for a decent average. Pretty good average, actually. But not many walks over the past 30 days. Not much run production. Not many extra base hits, and the power seems to have absolutely left him. So does this current downturn in his production change the way you think about him either this year or what the Pirates do from going forward? And Alex, you get to start this one.
I'm actually going to give a yes or no here. I'm kind of on the fence because Corey Dickerson is a guy who is never going to draw a lot of walks. He's a bad ball hitter. That's been his bread and butter. You could throw the ball anywhere within 2 feet of the strike zone and he can make contact with it. The dumb part of that is basically you are a slave to the batted ball and play gods. And earlier on this year, he was legging out infield singles and, you know, bloops were dropping in and a lot of things were going right. And he had the batted ball and play average, I think, hovering around 400, which is fine and exciting, and you could get, you know, talk about extensions or anything, but, you know, he wasn't hitting so much better than league average that you said, okay, no, this won't go back down. It's going to go back down to somewhere hovering around 300, like it does for most players in the league. What does surprise me, though, has been the complete absence of power, especially, I believe it's May 4th, the last time that he hit a home run, which this is a guy who, there weren't too many outfielders who had more extra base hits over the last 2 years than Corey Dickerson had. So this has been very surprising. We've seen him choke up, and maybe he's getting too aggressive with it. We've seen times where teams will shift, put that in parentheses, but, you know, it's just the shortstop going over a step or two towards second base, and then Corey tries to roll a ground ball where the shortstop vacated, trying to beat the shift and trying to be a good hitter. But, you know, this lineup needs power, and he has potential for power, and we just haven't seen it. He's not going to have that consistent of BP. That's always going to fluctuate. The power, though, should be able to be somewhat more consistent. It hasn't been. That surprises me about Corey.
Okay, but does it change anything about the way you feel about, well, how the Pirates might feel about him for this year and next? Do you want to hit that real quick?
I don't think that the Pirates ever really viewed him as a long-term solution. I think they just kind of viewed him as a stopgap for Austin Meadows, who looks major league ready right now, even though he's in a slump of his own, but, you know, seems like everyone has the confidence that he can break through. I don't think his performance surprises me or changes expectations of what I had for him, changes the Pirates' expectations. I think he's still going to be a name that was floated around the trade deadline, especially if the Pirates are not succeeding.
All right, Noah, you want to handle this topic?
Yeah, while Alex went with a whole bunch of numbers, I'm going to go a different route here. Let's take a look at Dickerson, the baseball player, prior to Meadows being called up. In 41 games, 51 hits, slash line of 317, 353, 509, OPS at 862. I know I said I wasn't going to go with a lot of numbers and just named off a whole lot of numbers, but please let me get to my point here. So pretty good numbers is what I'm saying. Producing well at the plate. He has all of his home runs that he still has now by that point. And then Meadows comes up, Marte goes on the DL, and a whole bunch of other things happen. And this is where this guy begins to fall off. This is where the problem started. My point is that baseball being a long season, you know, you're going to have bumps in the road that affect a player's ability to produce at the plate. And some of them might not be in their own control. And you've seen two things now in the last month that have affected Dickerson. It is, you know, with Marte going on the DL and Meadows coming up, and then once Marte comes back, you know, they start this four-man outfield rotation. Since that outfield rotation has started in 22 games, he's got 21 hits. Only four of those hits have been extra base hits. He struck out 14 times and has not drawn a single walk, not including the game today, I don't believe. His slash line is 266, 293, 329. His OPS is under 700 at 622. He's off rhythm. He's striking out 17.1% of his at-bats because he's used to playing every day. And if that wasn't enough of a factor that's affected his production, you got to remember, this guy just came off the family medical emergency list. So who, you know, and there's not really much of a story as to what was going on there, but who knows how long that was going on. That might have also been affecting him mentally. This is a family guy. He's got three kids. They're always running around the clubhouse, and he seems like a pretty devoted father and husband, and whatever what was going on with his family, that might have taken away from his ability to play. So to round up my answer, I think that with being in this four-man rotation and with family issues, his production has, you know, been a little off, but I still think the Pirates are big believers in Corey Dickerson. I'm still a big believer in Corey Dickerson. Maybe not as much as a power hitter, but can you really expect a guy's power numbers to be as solid when you're moving him all over the order every single day? He's batting second, he's batting third, he's batting fifth. You know, pick a spot for him and let him play there every day, and I bet you that production goes up. My only thing that I believe has changed when it comes to viewing Corey Dickerson is the urgency to trade this guy. Like Alex, I also believe that the Pirates looked at this guy as a placeholder for Austin Meadows, and they were very happy with how well he started off, knowing that we might be able to get a little bit more than we expected when we flipped this guy at the deadline. Well, if his numbers continue to plummet, they're going to have a real pickle on their hands, because they were really hoping for a decent return on this guy who has still another year of control if they want to. So they got to really hope this guy gets out of the funk that he's in, starts pulling some doubles, starts getting on base, gets that average back over 300 where it fell beneath today in their loss. And so they can, you know, trade him for something that they will be able to use long term when they get back to being a winning ball club.
Okay, well, wow. I mean, you guys both brought on that one, but I'm going to give it to Noah for no other reason than I think, you know, the points he was making about moving him up and down the lineup kind of feed into the third question I have for you guys. So also, again, with the Fire, so that's always good for Noah to get a point there. So all tied up at one, we're going to go to our last topic here today on Cannonballs. And by the way, if you own a business or if you're a decision maker at a business, Locked On Pirates is looking to bring on some advertisers. So we are a semi-daily podcast. So that fact alone gives you a pretty good ROI for not much investment. We have pretty good rates right now. So please give me a shout. You can get me at Twitter at jrolsonpgh or email at jrolson@gmail.com, and I'll get you started.
Before you get on to this last topic, Jason, I just want to point out that Noah took the shot at me being the numbers guy, and then I need a replay on this, but I'm pretty sure he cited far more numbers in his argument than I did.
Well, hang on. Well, you went with the fancy Billy Bean numbers here. I went with the traditional stuff, and I said that his number, I had a reason why his numbers were affected is what I was going at. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I agree. But yeah, Alex, I pointed that out. I thought it was fair.
Yeah, Alex, you brought the sizzle, and Noah brought the sizzle and the steak. That's the best way I can put it. Okay.
I don't know how to respond.
Rightfully so. So we're going to move on to our last question here, and that's a very simple one. And it's on the lips of Pirates fans on Twitter, Facebook, in the bars, at the games, I'm sure, as well. Simply put, is Clint Hurdle the right manager for not just the rest of this year, but let's say the next 2 years, with guys coming up and making their debuts hopefully soon, and Newman, Kramer, and other guys? Alex, what's your take?
As true believers of Locked On Pirates and other outlets that I write for, I made a trip out to Altoona last month because Brandon Waddle and Mitch Keller were pitching back-to-back days. That was too good to pass up. Watched them out there. And I can't remember which start it was, but these are two young men who both figure to be pitchers for the Pirates at some point within that next two-year frame. And I think it was Waddell, in fairness. And we asked the manager after the game, what did you like about Brandon Waddell's approach today? And he immediately talked about first pitch strikes and outs on three pitches or less. Anyone who's listened to a Clint Hurdle postgame knows those are vintage Hurdleisms. Those are his preferred, if not completely invented, analytics. I don't want to take anything away from first pitch strikes, because that is something that is very important to a pitcher's success. But the three or outs on three pitches or less is pretty much make-believe. We've seen Gerrit Cole having far more success moving away from that. Charlie Morton having far more success moving away from that. And whenever you see those cases like that, you have to wonder, is Clint Hurdle actually the right guy for the job? Because this game has changed dramatically since 2013, 2014, whenever he started this three pitches or less, you know, harping on that. This is a different game. The two-seam fastball is basically dead for every other franchise besides the Pirates. Everyone's moving on to four-seamers, and the Pirates are catching up with that, but they're also moving away from fastballs, and the Pirates are doubling down with that. Some of this belongs on the analytics department, but some of it also belongs on the manager. I don't think he's going to be able to innovate the game anymore. So keeping him as a manager, or his real argument for, would be he would have great success with the young players. I don't want to take anything away from him. He's done it once before with Andrew McCutchen, Pedro Alvarez, but I think last year would have been a very good breaking point just to end his Pirate career, or if they really wanted to, exercise his option that they had for this year and then see what happens afterwards. Right now, I don't know if he is the right man for the job, but I will put an asterisk to that they just gave this man a 4-year contract a couple months ago.
he's not going anywhere the next 2 years. Something would have to go horribly wrong for him to lose his job in the next 2 years. I think he and Neil Huntington have a good enough working relationship, even if they aren't seeing eye to eye all the time. And I think there are some problems with that. Huntington has talked about Pirates' bullpen problems the last couple of days. He says, part of this is on me for not giving Clint a traditional seventh and eighth inning guy, which, if you follow anything in the analytic community and the way baseball is going right now, seventh and eighth inning guys are going to be obsolete. So we have a real divide right now between what the Pirates are doing, what the Pirates want to do, and where what the league is doing to succeed. I don't know if Clint Hurdle is going to be able to go to either what the league is doing to succeed or what the Pirates want to do analytically, make those changes. I don't know if he is the right man for the job anymore. He had a fantastic run. He deserves all the credit in the world for coming into a complete dumpster fire and making it a franchise again. I don't want to take anything away from that. As a leader of men, I think he is a fantastic leader of men. But as a big league manager right now, I don't see how 2 years from now Clint Hurdle could be out managing anyone. Well, not anyone, but the vast majority of the managers that he needs to beat.
Noah, you're up.
All right, yeah, we're going to play a game within this game, and it's called Pick Your Journey. Now, if you're Bob Nutting and you want things to stay status quo, you want to, you know, keep things the same way financially, you want to keep things going the way they're going now, then Clint Hurdle's your guy. Because like Alex said, you know, he's not really adapting. He's not really changing. But if you want to turn this franchise around and make them competitive again, he's not your guy. You've got to look elsewhere. And I, like Alex said, with all those numbers, let's talk about things other than numbers. And this time I actually mean it. Let's talk about his misuse of individual players and his career as a manager. The whole Pedro Alvarez problems, I know some of that's out of his control, but not sticking with him and then putting too much faith on him and then trying at first base and just everything going on with him, that was a disgrace. Keeping Tony Watson in too long as a closer. The S-Rod experiment, which is continuously going on. John Jaso, Polanco. You can name a whole bunch of guys that this manager has just put his undying faith in, and they have continued to fail him. He's got to have a shorter leash with guys if you want to be a competitive ball club, because their individual players have cost this team so many wins in his term as the Pirates manager. Let's look at the other guys on his coaching staff. Ray Searich, what's he really done aside from a good couple reclamation projects? I know everyone was praising him 5 years ago for Liriano and Burnett and Volquez, but where are those guys now? They're not on our staff. All of these young arms that have come up through the system, they've not been able to, you know, be good enough to make this team a playoff contender. And that falls on Searich, which ultimately falls on Hurdle as the head of the staff. You take a look at his base coaches, who have continuously made errors, sending guys, not sending guys. It always seems like the Pirates are one of the worst base-running teams in baseball. That's on him at the end of the day. When his staff messes up, it's on him. Let's look at his inability to develop prospects. I know that's more of a front office thing, but as a manager, as a guy who was a big-time prospect and didn't develop, I'm sure when they hired him, they had hoped that he'd be able to give a little bit of guidance to a team that depends on young players, because he was a young player with a lot of pressure that he didn't amount to anything with. Same case scenario. There have been tons of prospects like Tyler Glasnow, Gregory Polanco, Jameson Taillon, who had these big expectations but really have not delivered so far. You could even throw Elias Diaz in if you're looking at his defense, though I think, you know, much still to be written in that book. And then his unwillingness to be creative. When you're a small market team like Oakland, like the Rays, like, you know, a whole bunch of other teams that aren't willing to spend money, like the Indians, you've got to be able to be creative on how you use your lineup. You see the Rays, what they're doing now in bullpen games. You see the Indians, where they find a dominant reliever like Andrew Miller. Instead of using him in just the ninth inning, they move him all around to make them a more competitive ball club and make them a little bit different, doing things that we really haven't seen in baseball. Clint does not go against the book. He does not get creative. He tries the same thing over and over again. And like Einstein said, you know, you're insane if you keep doing the same thing over and over again, expect different results. And to conclude my point, the main reason why this guy is not the right manager for the Pirates is, you think things are bad now, Let's look ahead into the future this month. Clint Hurdle is awful in the second half of the season. In July, that's his best month as a manager. His record as a Pirates manager is 104-75. That's 29 games over 500. But in August, he's 93-105. That's 12 games under. And in September, he's 88-104, which is 16 games under. Now, pretty much every single season that he's been with the club, coming into the second half of the year, this team has been around the point of being competitive for a wild card spot at the very least. And then the second half of the season, either a trade goes wrong, they don't make a trade, blah, blah, blah. But the team just falls apart. And you just look at his overall record in July through September, he's one game over 500. And in August and September, he's 28 games under 500. But you take out the 1 year where in those 3 months he had a winning record, which is 2015. So without 2015, we take those records out. His winning percentage is now 576, 87-64. That was just in July, excuse me. The other 2 months, 74-97, 71-91. Both of those winning percentages are under 440. Total record, 232 and 252, which is 20 games under 500. And in August and September alone, when you take out 2015, he's 43 games under 500, 435. And I get it. Some of those years by September, they were out of the hunt a little bit. You know, they're pulling up guys. They're just kind of building for next year. But like I said, for the most part, this guy's entered July every single season with the Pirates with a chance to compete for the postseason. And most of the years, they've been buyers, if not, you know, level. They've never really been a full seller in his 7 years at the deadline. And his teams have just fallen apart in August and September. And I think that's a trend that no one has really mentioned that much. And it's going to continue to happen. We're going to get, you know, decent production from his teams in the first half. In the second half, they're going to fall apart. You can blame that a little bit on the front office. But this guy, it's not his first year. He should be able to either adjust to what he has to work with, know that this is the expectation. I got to figure out a way to get this club that I have able to compete for 162 games, or you kick him to the curb and you find someone that can. So short answer, no, he's not the best option if you want to win ball games, if you want to get back to quote-unquote Bucktober.
Well, I want to take a few points on this, on what you just said. The Sean Rodriguez incident, I don't want to say incident because there isn't an incident, it's just fans being angry that he's finally getting some playing time after a couple weeks, you know, basically sitting. The real problem, I don't see a problem with that, because Pirates really don't have someone who can play middle infield right now at the moment besides Sean Rodriguez on the bench. Arguably, you can say Adam Frazier, but he can't play shortstop, and maybe Jung Ho Gung once he's finally rehabilitated and ready to go back up into the majors. But right now, you're kind of stuck with Sean Rod, so I'm not even going to blame him for that, or now that he had, you know, a couple starts in a row, just hoping upon hope that maybe it could jumpstart him, you know, seeing a couple, you know, pitchers on back-to-back days.
Now, can I counter your point by asking him, why does he play this guy in left field and at second base? And, you know, I mean, he's not just playing him at shortstop. There are plenty of guys who can play second base in the minor leagues and on the major league roster, and they have more than enough outfielders. So why is he playing him there? If he's the only guy good enough to play shortstop, he should just be playing shortstop. But he's playing three straight games. And like I said, Rodriguez is one of many people Hurdle's done this with.
Yeah, I'm sure it's just basically just Control-Alt-Delete at this point, hoping that anything upon anything could reboot him. Because the Pirates would be a better, much better team if they had 2016 Sean Rodriguez. And even with the shoulder injury, the swing doesn't look that much different mechanically. He's just not able to line it up at all. But what the Pirates are going through with Josh Bell is really what is concerning me about what the future of this franchise will be, whatever it's either Newman or Tucker or Hayes or Craig or Martin or Reynolds. There's a bunch of young position players. And you can say the same thing for pitchers also. I don't think anyone will argue that Jameson Taillon has reached his potential as a Pirate, that Joe Musgrove, who is the number 35 overall pick, has been that exciting. I might be the person who's most excited about Joe Musgrove right now in Pittsburgh, which is a little sad because even I have seen him cool down and see why Houston was willing to put him in either in the bullpen and then eventually trade him. cool.
Are you kidding me, Alex? That guy slid by as everyone loves him.
That is true. That is true. He is a god in Pittsburgh sports lore. Yeah. Chad Cole has the same stuff as Gerrit Cole, and oh yeah, Gerrit Cole never reached his potential. The Pirates are only going to be as good as their young players are, especially the young pitching, but young players in general. And right now, even those 2013-2015 teams, those weren't really built with young players outside of Andrew McCutchen and Neil Walker, and you can say arguably Pedro Alvarez, but then again, Pedro only had
Marte,
that is true. Good point. But a lot of those teams, it was the Russell Martins and the Francisco Lirionos and the A.J. Burnetts and Clint Barbases of that team that really carried them. It wasn't the young guys. Now they need the young guys to carry them. And Josh Bell, we just argued, has a sub-330 OBP and is having an awful sophomore season. And he's not looking any better as the year progresses. We're seeing the same problems over and over and over again. They can't beat it out of him. So whenever you have those problems... Whenever you have those problems, I'm almost done, and then I'm going to let you
door there. Okay.
Whenever you have those problems as a player development as a whole in this organization, especially in the minor leagues, needs a good long look at it, because the way that they are treating pitchers and making them all throw changeups and only three pitches, and either no one has coming up into the majors anymore, both vertical break and horizontal break, a.k.a. having a slider and a curveball. That's just unheard of. You can't do that to your arm, which is ridiculous. Everyone has to throw a changeup, and every changeup on this staff gets hit really hard. It doesn't work. It's not the type of pitch that you can really build around as a third pitch, even if you only have to throw it a few times a game because you're throwing 70% fastballs, which is also archaic. There needs to be a good, long, hard look in the mirror. And I was hoping that this year of rebuilding was going to do something along those lines. Clint isn't innovating anymore. Clint did his innovating for a career. We look at shifts as basically nothing nowadays. But back in 2013, it was a giant leap of faith for the Pirates to shift as often as they did. And Clint Hurdle deserves a lot of success to fight against every baseball instinct that had been drilled into him since the age of 14 and to say, okay, let's do this. And it worked. It's not working the same way anymore. They need to change it. This is such a cyclical game. And right now, he's kind of stuck in a tough spot where it's either I have to completely abandon everything again or I could double down on it. Right now, he's doubling down. Doubling down isn't working. It's not working right now.
Yeah, I agree. And Alex, are you saying that the front office is the blame for the players, the young players not developing, or is there any blame on Clint? Were you saying that some of the blame goes on Clint there?
I think there's a lot of blame to go around there. I think Clint and the coaching staff up in the major leagues deserves a fair amount of credit, or not credit, blame, especially for the pitchers. I think the minor league system that the organization is putting into place, not to mention, you know, the players that the organization is picking up for them. I mean, Jameson Taillon has been a completely new pitcher ever since he added his slider. And that was a pitch that he had coming in. He had a pitch coming into high. He had that pitch coming out of high school. And the Pirates said, no, you can't throw that because it'll hurt your arm. Well, he got Tommy John anyway, so that did a whole lot of help. It's
well, that's my whole point with all of this is, you know, these draft, like all these big prospects that they have had that haven't come to fruition, they weren't bad in the minor leagues. They were doing well. Tyler Glasnow is a perfect example of that, you know, and everyone else you point out, they were doing well. And then once they get to the majors, then the real problems start to show. I put that on the manager more than the front office. That might just be me. And then to go back on the young guys not contributing in the playoff days, I remember Jordy Mercer starting in that one game wild card, if I'm not correct. And he took Clint Barmas' job that year. They looked to Marte in 2012 to be their big acquisition when they called him up to make a little bit of a difference, and though he didn't do enough to get him to the playoffs, he was an everyday starter the next year and stole over 30 bases. He was their leadoff hitter in that postseason run. Polanco provided a little bit of a spark throughout the 2014 season, and Gerrit Cole was their best starter in the short playoff history that the Pirates have had in that three-year window. So, I mean, they have been able to get a little bit from the young guys, like you said, back when Clint was in his prime as a manager. His prime is beyond past now. He doesn't know how to use the young guys, and he doesn't know how to use the old guys. He holds on to them too long, and he uses them when they are past due. He is drinking expired milk right now with Sean Rodriguez, and it's not the first time he has forgot to throw away spoiled baseball players in his refrigerator. Well, there you go. That's my
question. Yeah. My name is Jason. I'm also on this podcast, and let me just
hi, Jason.
Hey, yeah. This is actually great. I pulled the ripcord and just let you guys go, so that was awesome. But let me throw something in here. I'm listening to both your arguments. Do you guys know how many times you mentioned the minor league system, development, what they're doing with pitchers? And going back to the original question, if Clint Hurdle was the right manager for these young players coming up, I think we maybe hung that hat on Hurdle a little too much. How much of that falls on Huntington or Broadway or Cal Star, Greg Smith, run the names down the line? And because of that, for me, I'm judging Hurdle based only on what he does with the lineup he's given. And based on that and based on your responses, I'm going to give this round to Alex, who kind of stuck it more to on-the-field stuff before we went on our tangent. So, but listen, all great discussion, though. I just feel like we need to remember how much of that goes to the system development guys as well.
And I think going back to the original point that I made 26 hours ago about whenever Brandon Waddle and Mitch Keller first pitch strikes three pitches or less, I think that, at least to me, indicates that the player development is siding with Hurdle, while maybe the analytical and the scouting, there is a divide right here. I don't think all four of those facets are on the same page right now. I don't think you can make the argument that they are.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that. It's just we'll never know how much of the pie is, what percentage of the pie is on one side or the other. We're never going to know that. But we can kind of, at least for me, I can kind of infer the way the pitchers go out there and the plan that they execute kind of leads me to believe Hurdle has a bigger seat at the table than many would think. That's just my opinion. But look, we got another episode of Cannonballs in the can. This is great. I'm very glad we brought this back. If you've listened to Cannonballs before, you know that because Alex won, he gets to open the next show with a one-minute rant on anything he wants to talk about. So we have that to look forward to, which should be great. Air quotes is what I'm doing right now. You can't see that. But listen, it was great to get back in the saddle again. Noah, thanks so much for your appearance today. And where can people find you on Twitter?
Thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun. I figured I was going to lose to Alex. I talk to Alex every day when I'm in the press box, and he knows his baseball. So I hope I at least put up a little bit of a good fight. My Twitter handle is Noah_Hiles95.
Yeah, you certainly did. And Alex, where can people find you on Twitter?
And you can find me at Alex, the letter J, Stumpf, STUMPF. And Noah, thank you for being on. It was fun. It was fun. You're baseball absolutely. Too, man. I'm glad. I'm always happy to talk baseball with people who actually understand the game.
Okay. Well, on that note, we hope to bring you another episode of this pretty soon. In the meantime, please subscribe to our show if you haven't already. You can find us on any podcast app, really. Just search for Locked On Pirates or check us out. Check me out on Twitter at JRolsonPGH. I'll have a link up there. And we post every episode to bucks.gout.com as well, so you really can't avoid us. So might as well subscribe, rate, and review, and tell a friend. So for Alex and Noah, this is Jason, and we'll talk to you next time on Locked On Pirates.